From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to a special edition of Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis, your host for this week's show. If you're wondering why I am hosting this show, as everyone is now aware, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected all aspects of our lives, including our programming here at The Voice of America. We are working very hard using creative ways to help keep you up to date on the latest news developments. Well, joining me via phone is one of Issues in the News' distinguished journalists, and that is J.J. Green, National Security Correspondent for WTOP and host of Target USA. Welcome, JJ, and thank you for your flexibility and being able to join me via phone.
Thank you, Kim. It's my pleasure. And being a veteran of the VOA, I certainly understand the challenges that you're facing and applaud you for taking these steps to make sure that the show goes on, as they say.
Thank you so much. Well, of course, the biggest story around the globe right now is the coronavirus, which continues to spread in various parts of the world. Cases are now being reported even in Africa. Here in the U.S., the state of California has been shut down by the government in hopes of stopping the spread of the virus. While the U.S. Centers for Disease Control admits that much of COVID-19 remains a mystery, the coronavirus has been around for decades, and recently, from June 2014 through July 2017, there were 39,558 cases of a positive strain of corona just here in the U.S., which is an average of 13,196 cases during that time frame. Presently, some parts of the world experiencing a surge of the virus. Well, so far, 86,000 people have recovered from COVID-19. Well, JJ, we have dealt with various viruses in the past, H1N1, SARS, MERS, Ebola, the Hong Kong flu, the swine flu, and back in the early 1900s, a flu epidemic that actually initiated here in the U.S., but was known worldwide as the Spanish flu, which killed hundreds of thousands of people worldwide. So what are your thoughts on why this virus has caused panic and fear here in the year 2020?
There, in my opinion, Kim, are three key elements. The pernicious nature of this particular flu, and also there is the way in which it was responded to early on, and then the fact that we are so globally connected are all contributing factors to why this has blown up into what it is. When you look at what took place in China, people started figuring out that something was happening in late December. I think it was around the 19th or 20th of December that people started to figure out something was going on there. But people were slow to realize just what could happen. Flights were still coming out of Wuhan and out of China internationally for several weeks after that. And it was very clear, probably by the early part of January, that that was blowing up into something that the world had never seen before. I don't believe the world was prepared for anything like this, and I think the key factor, again, is the global connectivity here that has triggered this worldwide pandemic so quickly, because when you think about it, this all started in late December, as I mentioned, and look where we are now in mid-March, and, you know, there are 246,000 cases of this, and it shows no sign of abating, at least in this part of the world. China is kind of steady right now. It's not according to what they say, and it's not clear that we can believe everything we hear from them. It's saying that there were no new cases. If that's the case, then great. But many people are worried about whether or not we can believe what they're saying about this.
Also, JJ, not everyone seems to be panicking over this virus. We're being shown videos and photographs of people in socialized settings still, such as the hundreds of beachgoers in Florida who are undergoing their spring break. And also a family in the U.S. state of New Jersey, they lost three family members to COVID-19 after a family gathering. So why do you think people still are not heeding the warnings and complying with the government regarding social distancing?
Tim, I think it's the time we live in. I've spoken with people who are experts in communication aside from the media. I'm talking about corporate and private sector communications and many different types of communications, even social media communications. And what they have said to me is this is plain and simple. People have gotten used to being able to access what they want to hear when they want to hear it, and things that they're not necessarily interested in, they ignore it. This is a different situation, and here's why. Yesterday, there were about 9,000-plus cases at 7:30 in the morning here in the U.S. Today, there are 14,000. Yesterday, there were about 13,000 in Germany at 7 in the morning. Today, there are 16,000. So what this means is that the U.S. infection rate is growing faster than that in Germany, and it's probably going to move past Germany, past Spain, even past Iran by the early part of next week. And only Italy and China will have more infections than the U.S., and a part of that has to do with the fact that people either don't know, don't care, or are not taking appropriate actions because they're not sure of what to do. And a lot of this has to do with people simply, as I mentioned before, ignoring what they've been told, and in other cases, not knowing exactly what to do.
Yes, this takes me back to our coverage here at the Voice of America of the Ebola virus in West Africa back in 2014, where a lot of the spread was due to people basically not following direction. People also getting a mixed communication. They're getting communication from health agencies, from humanitarian agencies, the WHO, the CDC, and yet they are also getting information from their local, you know, village chiefs who are telling them, sometimes giving them the opposite of what they were being told by the CDC. So I don't think that would be the case here, but I think it's mostly of what you're saying. People just say, I'm going to live my life the way I want to. I don't need the government to tell me what to do. So I think it's more of that than getting mixed signals.
Yeah, that is true. And this is here's the problem with that. If people decide to take that approach, then they may live much shorter lives. Because like your government or not, each government in the world, the leaders of the government are just as impacted as people who are the least, those in populations around the world. And here's why I'm saying this. This is an airborne transmitted type of virus, and it can happen to anyone, as we've noticed. We've seen situations where people who've either been on airplanes, people who have been in buildings, people who have been out in public places, sports figures, government figures, just everyday moms and dads and grandparents, anyone is susceptible to getting sick by being sickened by this virus. One thing that struck me as important is I was listening to a news conference from New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo on Thursday, and he said thousands and thousands of people have this virus, and we don't know who they are because we can't test them. But the most telling thing he said to me was thousands and thousands of people had this virus before we knew about it. And
exactly.
He said many of them have recovered on their own, but this suggests to me that coronavirus was a problem well before it became publicly known. And there may be people struggling with this now. So this is the key thing to be looking at, I think, for those people who are reluctant to pay attention, is that it may already be in your neighborhood, may already be in your home, but you need to pay attention because the result could be problematic.
Exactly. Now, JJ, we do have Paul Brandis on the line with us now. We had some technical difficulty earlier, and we're now able to bring him in. This is Paul Brandis, White House reporter for West Wing Reports and columnist for USA Today. Thank you, Paul. I'm so glad you could join us.
How are you?
Thank you. Good. Now, Paul, for you, here in the U.S., the Trump administration is taking measures to not only combat the spread of the virus, but to help people economically so that the economy does not collapse from this. Some of these measures include a coronavirus stimulus plan to provide people with cash, to help small businesses stay in business, and to prevent home foreclosures. He's also deploying two hospital ships, one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast. And also, he may enable the Defense Production Act. So, how do you think President Trump is handling the pandemic?
Well, according to him, he's doing a great job, but the critics, of course, point to the fact that we are well behind in testing. Here's kind of an interesting story. The first confirmed case of coronavirus was confirmed in both South Korea and the United States on the very same day. South Korea has raced ahead with massive testing of its people. They have lowered the curve. That's the prevent the curve. That's sort of the phrase that's being used here. But the United States, in that regard, is way behind. There are shortages of testing kits. There are shortages of masks. There are shortages of all kinds of medical gear, all sorts of things. This isn't me saying that. This is governors around the nation who say that. This is hospital officials around the country who are saying that. So that's sort of the situation on the ground. And as this virus spread, the number of cases is growing quite rapidly. I think there's going to come a time when these shortages become quite apparent.
JJ, your thoughts on this? I know you previously mentioned the lack of testing in the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. And, we're seeing the results of this. One of the things that took place as this started was we were seeing in some places a dramatic rise in the number of cases. In other places, there's minimal reporting. Even yesterday, you look at Russia. Russia was reporting something like 150-some cases of the coronavirus, and that was only 10 more than the day before. Well, it's exploding on its western border in Europe, and, of course, was a gigantic deal in China from the very beginning. Russia, which sits in between them, has not had more than a relatively few cases. So I started to dig into that and talk to some people about that in Russia and outside. One, they say they believe the government is lying about it because it's a governmental thing relating to Vladimir Putin's interest in getting two more terms to serve. And then there's this issue about the inability to get test kits. They can't get test kits. So a part of what I'm hearing as well from some of the folks I've been speaking with is doctors in Russia have been told to classify the cases of coronavirus that they get as pneumonia in order to not disturb the political train and also to try to save some embarrassment on not being able to get these test kits. But test kits are a problem, not just here in the U.S., but in other places as well.
And on that note, we're going to take a short break. Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel, J.J. Green, National Security Correspondent for WTOP and host of Target USA, and Paul Brandis, White House reporter for West Wing Reports and columnist for USA Today. Well, I'm going to throw this question out to both of you. What would it mean for people if the government declares a coronavirus national emergency? JJ.
Well, what it would mean, and we should take this very seriously, I was there in the VOA building on September 11th, 2001. And for those who remember or know the history of that day, they know that the plane that crashed in Shenzhen, Pennsylvania, was supposedly destined for the U.S. Capitol. And for those who know anything about the VOA building, headquarters building, it's literally right across the street from the U.S. Capitol. I can recall walking out the door and seeing the streets swarmed with black SUVs with blue lights in a panic. I can also remember probably maybe a half an hour, 40 minutes later, walking up to the roof of that building and seeing the Pentagon on fire. And, of course, knowing that the two towers had been hit in New York. The whole country was in a bit of a panic. So what this suggests to me right now is that authorities know what they need to do in order to deal with this on a national scale. But what has to be done is the same thing that was done that day. Later that very same day, I can remember walking down the street, Independence Avenue. There was not one car in sight. There were only military vehicles on the sides of the road, and people were told walk in the center of the street and do not veer away from that. Just walk down the center of the street. What I'm getting at here is there are going to be some very strict circumstances. London is going to lock down shortly, at least on a partial basis for this weekend. It's not clear for how long. That kind of activity may come to the U.S. That kind of activity may mean people needing permission slips, if you will, to be out on the streets. It also may mean people being tracked by the governments. I know that several governments overseas are already doing that, using location data from smartphones and other devices. Those kinds of things could come to the U.S. if it gets to that point. And based on where we are right now, and as you mentioned earlier, Kim, people not heeding the advice of staying in and continuing to trigger more infections, that may be a done deal here in the U.S. unless things change.
And also, Paul, your thoughts on this. I mentioned earlier that the governor of California shut the state of California down, meaning that people can only go out for essentials such as food items or medicine. They can go out to exercise, I understand. So your thoughts on this?
Well, we're already seeing some of the curfews in place, for example, in the state of New Jersey, which is on the U.S. East Coast, quite populous state. The governor there has ordered a statewide curfew. You can only be out in an emergency or if you're going to the grocery store or something. And I think those are beginning to pop up in other places. But I want to comment on something that JJ said, very interesting point about 2001. That was now nearly 20 years ago. Hard to believe that so much time has passed. But what I think is interesting between then and now is that back then there was a lot more confidence and trust in the U.S. government to do the right thing. People had trust and faith in the government to do what was right. I think that is not so much the case now. We had a big economic crisis here in 2007 through 2009, and polls show that ever since then, the trust that Americans have in government to do the right thing has eroded, and I think that has remained. So we enter this crisis with a lot less trust and faith in government to do the right thing, frankly, and also it has not helped that President Trump has said things in the White House briefing room that frankly aren't true about how there's testing kits available for everyone and the numbers are going down and so forth. So in terms of trusting the government, there are all kinds of reasons to support the theory that people simply don't have faith in the government to do the right thing here. And in a crisis like this that is only getting bigger, that is a problem. So I think that's something that we have to keep in mind as well.
And also, I just want to go back and look at China just for a second, where it has been reported in Wuhan, China, that this virus originated. And there have been reports that China is saying and blaming even the U.S. for manufacturing this virus. What are you all's thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, there have been discussions about this being a bioengineered virus from the very beginning. And you know, there have been even some prominent people, including a U.S. senator, who repeated that theory out in public, that this was a bioengineered virus, but he said that it was China that did it. Now, China is saying, among others, that it's something the U.S. did. But, you know, you have to think about this in a logical way. If you look at what this has done to China's economy, it's basically delivered a blow to it that it's going to take a while to recover from. And when you talk about what the U.S. is facing, and this president is facing a re-election year, and the way this isn't going well for him or for the U.S. or for China. And I don't think that anybody that unleashes anything or creates anything like this and unleashes it is going to do it without some kind of consultation or some thought to how it's going to impact them personally at home. Unless, of course, this was some mad scientist that nobody knows about, I don't buy that conspiracy theory piece.
What about you, Paul?
I mean, if you look at all the damage that has been done in China, an awful lot of people killed, their economy taking just a major hit over the past couple of months. These kind of viruses and pandemics have been a part of human history going back to the very beginning. It was only a century ago, in fact, that we had this influenza that killed millions of people around the world. And I've been talking to various experts on these kind of things who say, look, even when we get a grip on this coronavirus, and it's important to note that a vaccine, they say, is probably at least a year away, perhaps even longer, a year and a half is one date that they're talking about. There are going to be other viruses and other pandemics that pop up from time to time as well. And some people fear, in fact, it could be even worse than this one, if you can believe it. So this theory that, you know, some mad scientist in a lab did something and it got out of hand, it's like, to be blunt, kind of crackpot theories that pop up and they spread around the internet. And I'm sure there are people who believe those kind of things, but I just don't think it's true.
Well, it's estimated that the virus outbreak could go on for as long as 18 months. So if so, what would the new normal be like, and what lessons have we learned so far from this virus? For instance, I'm just looking at a lot of the small businesses, for example. Do they really have backup business plans to keep going in a case like this? Or even families, do they have preparations at home, family go bags, extra supplies at home? So what lessons have we learned?
Well, I think back to the time in the 1950s and 1960s when there were fears of nuclear war and school children practiced a ducking beneath their desks as if that would be helpful in a nuclear war. But people bought bomb shelters and put them in their backyard, and they stocked up on food and that kind of thing. I sense we're kind of going back to an era where I think some sort of a fear will hang over us, rather like it did back then. I think this has kind of a shaken at least Americans out of whatever a sense of complacency we may have had. The attacks of September 11th, 2001 that JJ was talking about also shook us out of a complacency. But that was 20 years ago, and I think this will kind of do the same thing. I think a lot of things that we've taken for granted in the United States, and I'm sure this is true in Europe as well, I'm not sure we can take kind of a carefree lifestyle that we've always assumed we would have. I don't think we can take that for granted anymore. And in terms of a lot of small businesses, no, most of them don't have a fallback plan. A lot of businesses literally survive a hand to mouth. A lot of them, I think, are going to go under. It's going to change a lot of things about the way we live and play. I think it's going to result in more people telecommuting, more people having long-distance education, all sorts of things that are going to change, well, that have been changing, and I think this crisis will simply accelerate some of these pre-existing changes.
JJ, how do you see the new normal?
Yeah, Kim, what you said earlier about this perhaps stretching out over maybe 18 months is, I think, spot on, and what Paul said as well is right down the middle on this. People, not just here in the U.S., but around the world, probably ought to look at this as a long-term scenario. Just based on what I've heard from medical professionals, from intelligence officials, and from corporate experts as well. And the interesting part about this is that it comes most likely in waves across this country, at least. It'll probably happen in waves. You know, it's not going to be a two-week scenario. It's not going to be a two-month scenario. It's probably going to happen in waves. And as I mentioned earlier, many people may have had this and didn't even know it. You know, the symptoms are said to be mild to moderate among some people. But there are 205 deaths in the U.S. And we can think of this similar to what we thought of back during the 9/11 crisis. Everything changed after that. We were warned about terrorism then. Some people ignored it. A lot of people laughed it off. We've been warned about pandemics. There have been movies made about them. People have sat there and enjoyed the movies. People have ignored the warnings of scientists and other people talking about preparations, et cetera. Here we are. We're awake now, and this is what we're going to have to deal with as the days, weeks, months, and, you know, perhaps even a year or more pass, is that we're not going to be able to do the things that we did before for a good while. So people should have those plans in place. They should also prepare for what we don't know. And how do you do that? You do that by keeping your ears open and your eyes open and remembering that this whole business about hygiene is key. You know, washing your hands and things like that. That stuff is key right now, especially when we deal with this. So people are going to have to pay a lot more attention to not just what they do at home, but what they do out in public, and realize that this is going to be a situation that may take quite a while.
Well, we're going to end our program on that note. I want to thank my two guests, distinguished Washington journalist Paul Brandis, White House reporter for West Wing Reports and columnist for USA Today, and J.J. Green, national security correspondent for WTOP and host of Target USA. Thanks again for your flexibility and for your thoughts as we live through the COVID-19 pandemic. This was a special edition of Issues in the News, and we will continue to work to bring you up-to-date information weekly on this program for as long as we technically are able to do that. Thanks to our engineer, Joe Gill. I'm Kim Lewis, and please tune in next weekend for another edition of Issues in the News right here on the VOA.